Blog Talk Radio.
It's Mark Rawson. I'd like to welcome you to another night of Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're normally on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30, and we've been making updates and kind of making announcements as we go. We are actually going to be moving the show to Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and our first show is actually going to be this Monday, and we're very lucky to have a psychic medium angel reader with us. Melissa Hevener is going to be our guest for our opening show on Monday, and that's going to be 8 o'clock, so we'll no longer be holding the 9:30 time slot, and we're really happy about the time change because I know we're trying to be able to service our friends in Australia and in China and other parts of the world who are in different time zones, so we're really excited about that change. I've been waiting for my co-host, Pam Latour, to come on. She normally calls in the last couple of minutes, but she's not on this evening, so we might actually be doing this a little bit solo. So I know she's been having some problems with allergies lately. So it's been interesting here down in Florida because we've been adjusting between very nice temperatures, and then every once in a while it gets cold. Of course, not cold compared to the rest of the United States right now. So, you know, with that, I want to go ahead and start to introduce our guests for this evening. And before I do that, let me just give out the website to everybody. If you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And as always, if you missed any part of the show or anything like that, you can go back and listen to the replay anytime you want. So with that, I'm going to go ahead, and my guest was actually helping me correct over and over again. As everybody knows, Mark is very challenged with people's names. And let me see what this is. Is it Mikaela? Mikaela?
It's Mikaela. I'm just going to pronounce my own name. It's Mikaela.
Thank you. Thank you. You can know right up front that I do not do that intentionally. I am challenged.
That's all right. It's not a very usual name.
So I was talking to her before the show got started this evening, and I was telling her that you know, I started by studying some of David's work in relationships and energy of male and female. And, you know, after studying a lot of his materials, I started to look around at different workshops that he does. And our guest this evening was someone who came as highly recommended. We'll be finding out a little bit more about the path that she's been on. And the fact that, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, she's the only one that's actually certified in the whole world to teach David's work. So we're going to find out more about that and all that exciting things. And I was just telling her I felt so honored that she was on the show this evening because I've been trying to – I started to think about having her on the show about a year ago, and I've spent the last, I think, 3.5 months trying to schedule her, and I actually found somebody who actually has a busier schedule than I do. So, so with that, why don't you go ahead and pronounce your first and last name and give out your website to everybody?
Okay. First name is Michaela, last name is Goem, and that is spelled like Michael, so M-I-C-H-A-E-L-A. B as in boy, OEHM.com. So it's MichaelaBoehm.com. But Michael was an A, and then BOEHM as in Mary.com. I'm sure you'll have it on the website as well, right?
Yes, I do. So if anybody goes to SpiritualConnectionsRadio.com, the link is there, and the proper spelling of her name is there. So,
yes, I know.
You know, for people who are not familiar with David's work, because, and we could probably even go further back than that as far as your history and how you started with your own work, but maybe if you could just bring everybody up to speed on what David actually teaches for people who are not familiar with his work.
Well, you know, David Data is probably the pioneer in really in a very practical way of defining the masculine and feminine in us and the ways we develop in relationship and sexually, long before anyone else came along, long before Mars and Venus and, you know, whatever is out there. David's been at this for a long time, and he's been teaching for over 30 years. And we had a little bit of a conversation before the show started about, you know, the difference between a teacher and a practitioner and, you know, a spiritual teacher and a practitioner. And so David is truly a practitioner, meaning he doesn't teach anything that he hasn't himself tried out, learned, and discovered. And in that way, it's quite extraordinary because he'll be able to guide you through your own process by knowing what it felt like because he's been there in one way or another. David's work and my work in intersects in certain ways. And then I've had an education before I met David, and that kind of plays into my work as well. But to just stick with David's work for a moment, his whole, well, I don't know exactly how to say that because it's a very wide-ranging and really, immense body of work. But if we need to do a Cliff Notes version, David teaches and works with creating intimacy and polarity. So what nowadays is called sacred sexuality would fall into this, tantra would fall into this, intimacy in a relationship. And so those are the areas that we work in.
Okay. I do want to understand more about, you know, where you've come from and the path you've been on. So tell us about how you got your start, you know, before even you got introduced to David's work.
Well, I started fairly early because I had a very strong sense of, gender difference. Not so much because, I mean, there's two things happening. There's gender, there's gender-specific things, and then there's masculine, feminine-specific things, which we'll pull apart later. But I had a very strong sense very early on that being a woman entailed very different things than being a man. And I was very curious about the actual differences as far as psychology and evolution went very early on, was like 14, 15. I've also had a fairly early spiritual quest, by 13, 14, I was pretty clear on the fact that, the way religion was taught in school was not the way it was for me. So by the time I was 16, I had started really looking into teachers and, modes of developing myself. So I started early, and then went to school, studied psychology, got a lot of different education in the realm of body work, breath work, subconscious work, trauma work, and all of that kind of pulled together in kind of a modality where I was working with men and women in relationship on their differences, both as far as how the brains are wired, psychological things, emotional things. And so by the time I came across David, I already had a fairly good sense of how different things needed to be addressed for men and women. And when I met David and when I first, saw him speak, he had so very eloquently expressed things that I had seen in my work and experienced myself that, it was very powerful when I got to align with that.
Wow, that's incredible. So tell everybody, because I have so many questions for you. I'm just kind of biting at the bit, so I'm going to hold back a little bit here.
Well, go ahead.
let's start with something simple for right now, and that is, what is it that you do today? Like, how can people work with you? What does that look like in a group setting versus private work and stuff like that?
Right. Well, as it is today, I'm, incredibly privileged, like you were saying earlier. I'm one of the few people who's worked, there's only a handful of people who've worked with David as it is, but I'm the only one authorized to counsel and teach at this time, and I get to actually co-teach workshops with him, which is incredible. Teaches only a few select workshops a year, and those workshops are just incredible, very small groups, very intense, go very deep. So I get to teach with David, and then the rest of the time I split my time between teaching by myself, so I teach David's work and my, my development of David's work as it applies to women. So I do both co-ed workshops where I work with men and women on sexuality and polarity and relationship, and I also teach women's workshops very specifically on developing the feminine and, finding your very own flavor of the sacred feminine. I also train people for more long-term work, so I do 6-month groups, and both for men and for women. And I train assistants, teaching assistants, who eventually will be able to teach under me and assist David. And we have a bunch of people who are being trained to assist and help with workshops. So that's the one aspect, and I do quite a bit of that, both in the U.S. and internationally. And then the other thing I do is I offer very few one-on-one sessions these days, but I still do on occasion Skype and in person, not as much as I used to. I used to do weekly sessions. I work with a few people very, very intensely, usually 2 or 3 people for long periods of time where I travel with people. I see people for very condensed periods of time. And so that's how I spend most of the time that I'm not teaching these days. I have a few super intense clients. And then once or twice a month, I offer some regular phone sessions.
So what is the next group workshop that you have coming up?
The next thing, well, for people who are in LA on March 4th, which is next Tuesday, I offer a co-ed practice group once a month on a Tuesday evening, 7 to 10. And that practice group goes through all of David's principles, and it introduces the principles. So it's open to new people, but it's always different. So even if you've come for years, it's always a different offering and a different format. And then the next thing coming up is London. I'm teaching the same kind of poet evening in London on March 8th. That's a Saturday in Islington. And then from there, I'm starting new men's and women's groups that are, you know, dedicated six-month groups that help people stay together in April. And I also have a women's weekend coming up in April. And then from there on, my schedule is pretty full. I'm going to teach at Esalen again this year, both men and women, and the women's workshop, Vancouver, Switzerland in June, probably England again in June, and possibly also Holland in June. So I'm still working on the schedule a little bit, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah. So, you know, from doing the workshops and everything, what do you think is the, you know, because you've worked with so many men and you've worked with so many women, if you were to single out the most common thing that most men are working on when they come to this workshop, or the most common thing that a woman is working when she comes to this workshop, what would you say that would be?
I think, you know, the main thing that unites us all is that we're all essentially either craving more depth of intimacy, you know, stronger polarity, meaning sexual attraction. And then individually for women, it's usually, you know, having a much deeper love exchange than we have. And for men, it's finding a much deeper purpose.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That means so much at so many different levels. So it was funny because, you know, this probably would be a good time to talk about this for a second because, you know, one of the things I said to you in the beginning before we went on the air is, you know, I said, you know, I see so much of the work that you and David do is kind of spiritual. And you kind of said, you know what, we can definitely talk about that. So let's talk about that. Is the work that you and David do you consider it to be spiritual? And how do you distinguish it as being different?
Well, you know, it's a bigger conversation. We started this conversation by me saying, you know, that was I a spiritual teacher? And me saying, no, I don't consider myself a spiritual teacher. And I know David doesn't consider himself a spiritual teacher either. It's more that I'm a practitioner of a certain kind, and I've done something for a long time now, I think 14 years in the States altogether. And you know, David's been teaching for 30 years. So, of course, it's spiritual in the way that the deepest expression of what we're capable of as humans is love, right? The transmission, the giving and the receiving of love, the opening one's heart as deeply and widely as one can. And so, of course, my work, David's work, you know, other people's work is about how do you give and receive, you know, the depth of what we're capable of in intimacy and in sexuality. So yes, it's spiritual in nature, of course, because there is really, these things are, you know, so hard to describe, but there's really nothing quite like opening to another human being and seeing God in another being, particularly when it comes to sex, right, while having sex, in the sexual interchange, doesn't have to be intercourse, but in the play of masculine and feminine. And so it's highly spiritual. But what has to be said about polarity and the exchange and the dance of masculine and feminine is that to create sexual energy, you need something else in addition to an open heart. Because the open heart in itself doesn't make it sexual. The open heart makes it love, and it's beautiful, and it's you know, hopefully an incredibly and earth-shattering experience. But sexual polarity, that which makes sex hot, so to speak, has as its basis an open heart, but also needs other things.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking at your website while you were talking about that, and I was looking at all the different things that you have available. So let me go back to some of the basic questions we're going to look at, and that is when we talk about the masculine and the feminine, and this whole idea about the changing gender roles today. Let's talk about that. What has been your experience?
Well, I mean, I think the thing to talk about first is the difference between masculine and feminine and male and female,
mm-hmm.
if you don't mind.
There's a huge
confusion in there. And in that confusion, there's a lot of, you know, controversy and people having very strong opinions, which is always good, but, you know, just to kind of wipe out a few misunderstandings. Male and female is your gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have corresponding genitals. Now, that doesn't account for and the male and female issue, but for the most part,
Hello? Hello?
Did I just lose you?
Yeah, I couldn't hear you at all. You keep on going in and out at this point.
Yikes. Okay. Let's see what we can do here. Can you see?
I started to hear you. Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. So now you can hear me again?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Sorry about that. So what I was saying is there's male and female, and then there's masculine and feminine. So male and female, I define as, you know, the actual gender, you know, your chromosomes. Now,
mm-hmm.
I was saying, of course, there's also things to be taken into account like transgender, but I'm going to leave that out for a moment just to make it a little bit, you know, quicker. So male and female is clearly your born gender. But
okay.
Masculine and feminine is always present in both, right? So a woman has both masculine and feminine, and the man has both masculine and feminine within them.
Okay.
So that's a very, very important distinction, because people say, you know, women do this and men do this. That's actually not accurate, right? The masculine and the feminine are in both of us. And what makes us more masculine or more feminine is kind of the percentage of masculine and feminine that we have within us. So when we talk about the masculine and feminine, it sounds very black and white, and people tend to get very offended. But, of course, every human has both in them, so nobody is just black and white. So in a woman, there's masculine and feminine, and if she is more at home in her feminine, meaning that's where she loves to reside and that's where she mostly would like to live, then she would be considered a feminine essence human, right? A feminine essence being.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I hope that makes sense. So when a man is considered a masculine man, that means he has more masculine than feminine in him, and he likes to rest in his masculine when he can. So
yes.
So I'm going to talk about masculine and feminine for a second, and then we'll go to how gender is starting to, you know, what's happening out there in the world. So the masculine as a principle is ruled by having a strong purpose, a clear direction, and a forward motion, so to speak. So the masculine is always directed towards something. And the masculine in each human being is the part that makes decisions, that has a bigger vision, that wants things in order, linear, forward moving. The masculine loves nothingness, right? Empty space, open, conscious awareness in which it, you know, the masculine can rest. So that's the pure masculine. So the pure masculine, when somebody is predominantly masculine, likes things very grid-like and orderly and focused and has a strong plan and a strong purpose and knows exactly how to organize life so that that purpose can be fulfilled. And the predominant masculine loves things like meditation or, you know, having a beer and watching sports without being interrupted. As close to nothing as the masculine can get, that's masculine bliss. Right? So if your idea of rejuvenating and having a good time is being in an almost empty room contemplating the nature of existence, you have a masculine essence, so to speak. Mm. I'm making this very simple, and you know, there's much more to it. The feminine resides in fullness, in everythingness, if there's such a word, right? So the feminine loves colors and textures and sounds. The chaos of nature is feminine. Everything that moves is feminine, as a matter of fact. Animals, children, friends over, music, food, you know, those are the swirls of the feminine. Once again, that's a very simplified version. So when a human loves to commune and exchange love and fill existence with the beauty of nature and, you know, God, that's the feminine essence.
Okay.
So if somebody feels more drawn by the description of the feminine, they're probably a feminine essence being. If they're more drawn to the description of the masculine, they're probably a masculine essence being. Now, depending on how much percentage there is of the other, right, that's more or less extreme. So there's extremely feminine people, right, women and men, who are total chaos. And there are extremely masculine men who are just so rigid, right? So, but for most people, they have a dominance, right? Their essence is either masculine or feminine. And more often than not, men have a masculine essence and women have a feminine essence. But there is women with a masculine essence and men with a feminine essence, you know, very clearly. But for the sake of ease, it's usually men who have a more masculine essence and women who have a more feminine essence. In a same-sex relationship, you'll see also that one partner is more masculine, one partner is more feminine, regardless of gender. Because in order to have a sexual relationship and in order to be sexually attracted, one partner has to be more masculine and one partner has to be more feminine, and those poles make for an interesting sexual attraction. Hmm. So that all said, are you still with me on all of that, or do you need any clarifications?
Yep. No, it makes perfect sense to me.
Okay, good. So then a more feminine essence being, you know, let's just say a woman has a more feminine essence. She is going to be attracted to a more masculine essence partner as a sexual partner.
Mm-hmm.
And but however, because we live in a predominantly masculine world, most women have developed a masculine very strongly. So most women can animate their masculine very succinctly and strongly, and you know, make their way in the world and do what needs to be done in order to conduct business. Most masculine essence beings, you know, men and others, don't have to necessarily develop that much feminine because that's not as much required in the world. So what's been happening ever since, let's say, women's liberation, you know, women's liberation liberated the masculine in women. So, you know, I remember the days of assertiveness training and things like that, right? So when women's liberation came along, women were suddenly allowed to animate their masculine, you know, to have a job, to be in the workplace, to become CEOs and all of that. So that part of women's liberation freed women to animate their masculine, and nowadays we can do pretty much everything men can do, and then some, because we still have our feminine. So when we talk about gender roles, nowadays most women actually don't need a man for the most part, right? Because they can do everything that men can do, and they can have children. So, you know, things have changed. While men, masculine men, you know, they operate in their masculine internally as well as in the world. And what's happened, of course, after women's liberation is that women started demanding that men become more sensitive and, you know, talk about their feelings and have feelings and animate their feelings and feel them and feel their children. So men have also started, you know, to get in touch with their inner feminine, you know, that the whole movement of men drumming in the woods and all of those kind of things is the movement of men cultivating their feminine. So where we stand today is that in order to be a full human being, it would be, you know, best if everybody could animate both their masculine and their feminine and should be allowed to do that. But the fact remains that we have an essence, which is kind of our home place where we rest and where, when you talk about spirituality, where we spiritually are at home, where our core and center is. So often in women who are more feminine women, they've had to learn so much about animating their masculine that they have kind of a deep yearning for just having their feminine a little bit more expressed. And so, you know, there's very specific practices, and a lot of what I do in my women's workshops, you know, goes towards that. But what's happened out in the world is that women have become incredibly, you know, just successful and applied and capable, and they no longer find men who can meet them and can match them because they don't actually need men for many things anymore. And so there's, there's a whole, you know, a whole lot of suffering because, I mean, I hear women every day saying, God, where are all the good men? And then I hear men say, wow, you know, I don't meet any women who are not incredibly sharp and angular and uptight and busy. And so that's the way things have changed.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break just for a second so I can do some announcements.
Great.
So I want to let everybody know we're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and if you missed the beginning of the show, I was announcing that we are going to be moving the show to Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So starting this Monday, the show will be on Mondays, and we will no longer be holding the Thursday night time slot. So to find out more about the changes and all the great shows and what's coming up, make sure to check out our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And we'll go back to our guests now. And I guess the next question I want to ask you is, you know, some stuff that all our listeners are going to want to know. And that is, how do you create a sustainable sexual attraction or polarity in relationships?
Well, Well, that kind of plays into what I've just said, which is in order to have sustainable sexual attraction, one partner in the relationship has to animate their masculine and one partner has to animate their feminine. And it wouldn't actually matter who does what, but usually the more feminine partner likes resting in the feminine and the more masculine partner likes resting in the masculine. And so that's a good starting point. But the more defined the masculine and the feminine are in the moment of wanting sexual attraction, the stronger the polarity is, you know, meaning the pole, the further the poles are apart, the bigger the arc. So, like, you know, anywhere in nature, when you have two poles, that makes for the strongest arc. And that's how you create most, you know, the most lasting and strongest sexual interest and attraction, because, you know, people are able to stay polarized.
Mm-hmm.
So how that usually works is that because we are all living in a very masculine-oriented world and most people work, when a woman comes home from work, she'll have to repolarize into her feminine. And when a man comes home from work, he needs to get a rest from the demands of, you know, having been masculine, having given direction, having given commands, you know, having had forward motion all day, so that he gets a little bit of a rest from that particular workout before he engages with his woman, who is also going to want more direction and purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like imagining that if you have a male who can basically go from one of his polarity to another, and you have a woman that can do the same thing, it must be a great experience to see that dance of energy or play.
With that consciously and have tools, you know, it makes for endless, you know, beauty. I mean, it's just a fantastic thing, and to be able to play that deeply in intimacy and in polarity, right? The thing that I was saying earlier is, of course, sexual attraction, sexual polarity without the heart, you know, without the wide open, vulnerable heart, is kind of mechanic. So it's both the depth of intimacy for the sake of thought, so to speak, right? And having strong poles that allow for, you know, a full sexual experience.
Mm-hmm. And that leads into our next topic, which is, you know, can you talk about the tools to enhance intimacy?
Yeah, I mean, there's many, but to begin with, I would say that intimacy actually requires, you know, mutual love, of course, meaning mutual willingness to just be with each other. And then from there, you know, there's some very simple tools, one of which is you have to actually make time to be with each other, which is not always easy. You know, most people are very, very busy, and they don't spend a lot of time together. And when they spend time together, they barely look at each other. So the first and foremost and most crucial tool in creating intimacy is eye contact. As simple as that, of just being with each other, looking into each other's eyes, not looking around, not looking at you know, the phone, the computer, whatever is going on, but actual eye contact. The next thing would be, that's more technical, you know, that's something for workshops. There's breath, you know, connecting through breath. Breath is life force, and breath is also how love is carried from human to human, so to speak. So, you know, breathing together, gazing into each other's eyes, you know, connecting heart to heart, meaning feeling the other person's heart, feeling your own heart, unguarding the heart, you know, unguarding your body. It's very hard to have intimacy when your arms and legs are crossed, or you are slumped over, or you're not breathing. So the simple act of opening one's eyes, one's body, one's breath, one's heart makes for, you know, deeper intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What do you think is the biggest challenge for women in as far as a tool that needs to be brought in to the workshops?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for women, including myself, is that we spend a lot of time doing, right? And doing is the masculine principle. Being is the feminine principle. So, you know, since work happens in the masculine principle, most of us spend a whole lot of time doing and very little time being, and that's painful. And mm-hmm. we forget how to be, and we forget how to flow, and we forget how to have emotions run through us uninhibited and not clenched down. And, you know, we don't get to move as much as we'd like to, and we certainly don't get to dance with abandon and, you know, run through the meadows with our puppies or whatever, you know, whatever version of feminine bliss somebody prefers. So the most important thing is to find ways and develop tools and create practices that allow us as women to be again and to flow again and to be the natural, you know, beautiful, chaotic, undulating selves that we are. And so that's, you know, that's a continuous quest for every woman I know.
Mm-hmm. And how does that translate into a problem with intimacy, you know, in a relationship?
Well, if both partners are doing, right, and if there's a, so there's two aspects to this. There's the intimacy and there's the polarity. In the intimacy, if both partners are doing, there isn't much time for exchange, right? And the busyness and the schedule, and, you know, I don't have children, but people who have children, I mean, are just scheduled so tightly, not only people who have children, but it's, you know, it's a very demanding life. So if there isn't intimacy, there can't be openness, you know, in the relationship. And on top of that, if the more feminine partner is always doing, she becomes tighter and tighter and tighter and, you know, more tense in the neck and shoulders, and her energy goes upward and she feels her body less. And, of course, that makes for less and less sexual desire just in itself if you don't mm-hmm. feel your body much. And, you know, if your head and neck and shoulders and jaw is tight, you're not as receptive sexually. So then when the more masculine partner is, you know, exhausted and weakened by the demands of the day and can't really guide her either, then there's a high chance that there's no sexual polarity. And then that leads to further frustration and usually to further doing. And, you know, that's how relationships start wilting. Yeah, it doesn't have to be like that, but it's a conscious effort to kind of come back into, you know, essential parts of ourselves and then give that as a gift to your partner.
Yeah, so normally I would say, okay, well, what does that look like from the male aspect? But I think, you know, when we were just talking about that main issue with women, I think if you look at the flip side of it, you're walking the same path. Men have the same issue.
Yeah, so, men have the same issue, and they have another issue. Well, men have the same issue as in they are constantly doing, and so if they are purpose-driven and if they do what they need to do in order to fulfill their mission in life, and they make a living, and they, you know, do all, of course they will be exhausted. So when they come home from work, all they want to sit on the sofa, watch TV, and have a beer, or some version thereof, play sports, watch sports, look at the computer, they don't want to engage because they've just had a whole lot of engagement. Now, the more feminine partner is going, let's exchange love. Let's be intimate. Let's be with each other. But she's tight and she can't really quite get herself to relax. So she'd like her man to relax her, but he is exhausted. So that's how most relationships are these days. And so the first and foremost step there is to recognize that that's the way it goes, and for the more masculine partner to get some rest, right? So have a moment to watch TV or stare into space or meditate or go for a walk, and then re-engage consciously when he's able to give her his direction and his clarity as a gift. And for the more feminine partner to, you know, have a bath, play with the dog, speak with a girlfriend, dance, get a massage, whatever it takes to relax the tension in the body, and then give the, you know, that disposition as a gift. And then for people to come together in a more conscious and relaxed way. So that's mm-hmm. one aspect. The other aspect, though, is that a lot of times in a relationship, because the more feminine partner has animated so much masculine, she has started to guide the relationship, and the man has, just relinquished the purpose and just follows direction, which makes him the more feminine partner in the relationship. And that might be totally against his essence, but that's just the way it goes. So you have a feminine woman who animates her masculine very strongly, and by the laws of nature, so to speak, that means the man becomes the more feminine partner. And then there's a constant frustration because everybody doesn't live where they would like to live.
Mm. So I think the last question we have for tonight is to talk about some of the enhancement or tools that are available for determining your life purpose.
Well, that's a clearly masculine question, right? So having a life purpose and having a strong mission is the masculine. The masculine needs to have a clear direction so that the path can be charted out. And so, in order to develop a strong masculine and strengthen one's masculine essence, knowing one's purpose is very important also, because only when you as a man have a purpose can a woman trust you, because she knows mm-hmm. that you know where you're going. And so how to find one's purpose is kind of, relationally, I think, as well as existentially, a very, very important piece. And usually how the masculine finds his purpose is by, inquiry, by actually eliminating all distractions and feeling into what he has to give before he dies.
Okay.
So that's the masculine purpose finding. David Data speaks about this in great detail. He is a man, and he is a very masculine man in all ways. So, there's distinct ways how you can, eliminate distractions by, not watching TV, not numbing yourself, not doing anything other than feeling the pain of not knowing one's purpose, and feeling what really still needs to be given. Now, in the feminine, it's not so much about purpose, but about her heart's yearning to give love in a certain way, right? And to mm-hmm. to exchange the gift that she has to offer as fully as possible. So that's a slightly different exploration that comes from feeling one's deepest heart and feeling what needs to be given.
I know when you were talking about the first aspect about, you know, a woman wanting that her man has some type of purpose, it reminds me a lot, and I think based on the male or the feminine, I think you could switch roles on that one too and just say, you know, if you had a strong female with a lot of male energy or the male aspect, you know, and you had a feminine male, you know, he would almost look to her for her having a purpose, you know?
Exactly, and you'll hate him.
So I think the interesting...
Well, go ahead. I'll say what I have to say after you said some interesting thing.
Yeah, so what I was saying is I think what I see the connection in that is I think all individuals in a partnership want to feel safe. And I think if you're with somebody who either doesn't know, they're not expressing some type of love, or they don't have a purpose, I don't know if the other individual can feel that safety. You know, because you're with somebody who doesn't have purpose, then how do you feel safe in that environment?
Right, exactly.
And I think safety is a really big aspect for people.
Huge aspect. I wouldn't call it safety. I would call it trust, but it's the same thing, right? So when you look at evolution for a moment, you know, to totally take it a notch, in evolution, the male in the evolutionary process made sure that the family stayed safe, right? So the male hunted the food and fought the battles. So that meant stronger and more decisive and clear and purposeful a man was. You know, we're just talking man, woman now, but, you know, there's, of course, fine distinctions, but in the cave days. So if you had a man who could hunt and kill and defend, and he knew where it was going and whom to kill and whom not to kill, your chances of survival were really big, right, compared to a guy who had no idea how to hunt a deer and he had no judgment on where to fight and how. Chances of survival, not so good. So evolutionarily speaking, women are told, like they're geared towards wanting to trust a man, and the more power and trust and integrity a man has, the better, because it grants survival. That hasn't changed. I mean, it's changed as far as women can take care of themselves, but when you have children with a partner, you want him to know where it's going and have a strong direction, for instance. So the other way around, though, for the evolutionary, you know, for the survival, that the female in the relationship had to be able to seamlessly flow with whatever happened and essentially multitask and keep the animals from the fire and the fire going and the kids from the animals and probably paint the caves while she was at it, you know, which is, has always been kind of a joke of mine. And in recent years, they found out that actually cave paintings have been done by women and not by men, as previously thought. So the multiplicity of women and the one focus, trust, and direction in men is what granted safety. So that hasn't changed that much. As you said, people want to feel like they can trust in a relationship, and how trust looks feminine to masculine is integrity and purpose. Now trust looks, or safety looks, masculine to feminine, essentially the exchange of love, right? The strong love exchange. And yes, you're absolutely right. If that's not given, then relationships are tough.
So in closing on the end of the show here, what is it is you think is the most important thing you want to share with everybody before the end of the show?
Well, I think I've covered pretty much everything. I mean, I haven't covered everything. There's many, 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 many more things. We haven't really talked yet about stages of development. We haven't talked about the more spiritual aspects of that. But I think the one thing... you know, to take home, so to speak, from what I've just said is that you want to find where your deepest heart rests, what essence, and cultivate that essence as a gift to your partner.
Hmm. Wow. It's amazing how fast an hour goes. So
yeah.
Do me a favor and give everybody your first and last name and your website.
Okay, well, first name Michaela, last name Boehm. Website, I'll spell that very carefully. M as in Mary, I-C-H-A-E-L-A, B as in boy, O-E-H-M as in Mary, MichaelaBoehm.com.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you for being on the show and sharing your knowledge and everything. And it's definitely been worth the wait to get you on the air. And I just so appreciate the teachings that you do and the work that you're doing out in the world.
Thank you very much. Last thing I wanted to say, if anyone wants to experience David Data live, right, there's only a few events a year. The next one is in August, and it's listed on both his websites, data.info, DEIDA.info, and on my website.
That's perfect. I was kind of looking through your website, and I noticed that you have what looks like an online video or something that's up there. I was just kind of checking it out a few minutes ago.
Well, ANSIOS, the ANSIOS Academy for Optimal Living, hosts my talks and, I do online teaching. Both, there's a few audio programs, and now we are doing video. So it's ANSIOSacademy.com, and you can find that on my website as well. So there's hour-long video teachings that make, that kind of go into details of different things I've talked about.
That's excellent. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and it's a great honor, and I wish you safe travels, and have a great evening.
Thank you so much. Bye.
All right, everybody. Okay, goodbye. All right, everybody, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and as I mentioned earlier, we are going to be moving the show to Monday night starting this Monday, and we have our guest Melissa Hebner is going to be on this Monday, and we're really excited about that, and if we're really lucking out, she might even do some readings on the air, so make sure to dial in and get a free reading and stuff like that on Monday. And as always, it's great having everybody listen to the show. I love all the feedback that you've been sending in. And as always, we always look to give you the best speakers and everything on the air for the show. So good night, everybody. Send you lots of love. And you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio.
Life is but a dream.